Blog Talk Radio.
Much less detail of the podcast on a Wednesday night, October 30th, 2013. I'm Dre, he's Jerry, and we are here for NFL week number 8 recap. Jason, it was a spectacular week, to say the least, for the offensive lines around the league, and especially for me, considering how many games that I dropped to you in the games this week. We differed on 5, and I managed to drop 4 of them, so truly a horrifying week for me.
Yeah, when I have good weeks, I have great weeks. It's been my whole season so far has been 2 big weeks against you head to head, and lots of little victories for you, and you know, and 8. Well, we're basically at the halfway point of the season, little bit of a debate because it's a 17 week season now, but you know, we're 8 weeks in, we're heading into week 9. I've managed to get myself back to a 6 game lead here, which I'm not used to this playing from ahead stuff. This isn't my style, so it's flying by the seat of my pants here for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I thought I was closing in on you. I had the 4 weeks in a row over 500. I was making some headway. I was getting closer and closer. I thought I had the lead figured out, and it just came up and bit me. Just all this horrible blocking just came up all at the same time and cost me a bunch of games. And it's something that I guess I need to start paying more attention to. We joked on the show last week about me picking a whole week of games last year based on nothing but plus minus in the sack department. And, boy, sacks played such a huge part in these games this past Sunday that maybe I need to start going back to doing that.
You know, it's not just sacks. There's a trend. I've talked about it to you a little bit. These teams with these running games, everything is still so predicated on passing right now. But there are so many teams that just can't run the ball. Don't even try. So going through box scores, writing up the recaps, you know, doing the limited amount of work that I do, the theme seems to be coming back to teams that attempt to run the ball and teams that are moderately successful running the ball can win. I mean, you had Oakland win, ran for a lot of yards. They ran for more. I mean, Terrell Pryor ran for more yards than he threw for. Well, that should be, you know, Roger Goodell probably had a heart attack when he saw that stat line. Atlanta got destroyed with no rushing attack. Minnesota, with Adrian Peterson, had no rushing attack. It's really seems to be that if you can pair up a running game with these, you know, Madden video game passing games, that you can be more successful. Because clearly as we get deeper into the season, you're not going to see, I mean, every once in a while you have this isolated incident of it, but you're not going to see these teams that are going to be able to go out, put the ball up 50 times and just hope for a win. The one game that really stood out to me is the one I've really been dying to talk about, was the Detroit-Dallas game. There's just so much craziness in the game, on the sidelines, in the numbers, historical collapse by the Cowboys. Historical. I think I just made up a word.
Historical?
Yeah.
I think that's good. I think that's legit.
All right. We'll have to check after the show. We'll have to check the tape.
That's right.
Well, actually, you're the only one who uses tape these days.
I don't have a choice. The only DVR DVD player that I had stopped working, so I have to go to the tape now. I've got this weird predilection for taping the World Series and the NBA Finals and the Super Bowl, and I want to have a physical tape of it. I don't want to buy a TiVo and try to record it digitally and then, you know, 10 years later, oh, it got accidentally erased. I don't know how that happened, and it's just down forever. So I do still go to the actual tape. I'm like Jaws in the vault with the actual tape.
Right, because as we're doing this show right now, Boston's about to win the World Series, it looks like, although crazier things have happened.
Spoiler alert!
Yeah, sorry, everybody. If you're listening to this show, especially if you're listening to it in the future, Boston looks like they're going to win the World Series.
Hey, that one live listener we had was trying to take the game or TiVo it for later, and now we just ruined it.
6-1 in the eighth, guys. Sorry. Dallas and Detroit, what did you think of that?
Wow, there's so much to think of it. You know, it was so strange to see Dallas get that lead eventually over the course of the game. They give up the plays to Megatron and just get bombed all over the field. And Detroit actually looks like the better team for most of the game, not the whole way. It's not like Detroit dominated Dallas. It was a competitive game. I thought Detroit looked better. But Matthew Stafford had some very ill-timed interceptions where he looked like he was looking for Sean Lee specifically. He was on the wrong team. And the game winds down and takes its turn and gets to the end, and Dallas is playing their end game. Looks like they play it pretty well to get the last little field goal to make it a 6-point game, bleed as much time as they can, and leave Detroit with, you know, seconds, basically. It was about a minute or so and no timeout that Detroit had on that last drive. And in typical Cowboys fashion, they allow Detroit to go down the field in almost the snap of a finger. It only took them about 3 or 4 plays, I believe, to get almost the length of the field all the way down to the goal line where Stafford stuffed the ball over on the fake snap and won the game with a rushing touchdown, which surprised everybody. As far as the actual game goes, that's the thing to take away to me is how Dallas got the advantage, got the lead, got the situation in their control. Just send your defense out there and you don't even have to rush the passer. You don't have to blitz. You don't have to do anything but just make sure Detroit doesn't get in the end zone. That's the one thing you have left to do. You let Calvin Johnson go off for 200-something yards already. Okay, that's done. That's over with. Now let's, you know, play soft, play whatever zone you have to play, play whatever prevent you have to play, and just keep them in front of you. Just keep the players in front of you. Keep Calvin Johnson in front of you. There's almost no other way for Detroit to come back and win that game except for Stafford to find Calvin Johnson because the other receivers were so inept for the Lions. And that's the one guy that the Dallas Cowboys could not manage to keep in front of them and keep separated from the football. It was incredible. I don't know how Dallas managed to pull that loss out. It was more Dallas pulled the loss out than Detroit pulled the win out, as far as I'm concerned. That's what I took from it.
Yeah, it was refreshing to me, just as a side note. It wasn't even directly part of the outcome of the game, but it was refreshing to me to see the outcome of a horrible Cowboys loss not be blamed solely on Tony Romo.
That's right. He didn't fumble. He didn't throw it away. It wasn't our Romo this time. That's right.
Yeah. No ugly pick. Didn't fumble the snap on the field goal to win the game. Nothing that he did directly caused them to lose. So obviously the focus went to, you know, Dez Bryant having his meltdown on the sideline. And again, I think some of that had to do with the fact that he called out Calvin Johnson, who had the second greatest receiving day in NFL history and the single greatest game in NFL history if you just do regulation time, because that the number that he was chasing was an overtime game.
Flipper Anderson.
Flipper Anderson. Now, would that have been Jim Everett chucking the ball around?
Christy Everett? I think so.
Better watch out. You know, don't get roamed.
Uh-oh, let me get away from the window. He might be out there.
It was a highly entertaining game. Detroit, I mean, completely dominated the stat sheet. Ugly turnovers, which is what Dallas' defense is supposed to be out there getting. They're doing their job, you know, holding the offense down, even if they're doing a little bend, don't break, opportunistic turnovers, whatever. Everything is tight. It was a very tight game until the fourth quarter, and then everything just went nuts. And it was incredible to watch, because it was back and forth, up and down. And you're right, there's no reason you give up the game-winning touchdown when that's the only thing that will beat you. Dallas just, all of a sudden, everything they were doing the whole game, they threw out the window, and they went into a little of the prevent yourself from winning defense. And
exactly,
teams do it all the time. They do it all the time. A field goal doesn't beat you. Just go out there and do what you were doing the whole game. And they couldn't do it. And ultimately, they deserved that loss. I mean, they totally backed into a loss, but they deserved it. Nobody in that division, nobody in the NFC East wants to win ball games.
That division is so bad.
This could be NFC West bad of a few years ago. I mean, first 1-8 might win this division. It is ugly.
It appears to me that Dallas is actually the class of the division. And that's not a good team. That's the Cowboys.
Nope.
Oh my God. Division is so overwrought. And, you know, even when they're bad, the coverage is still bad, because the news is now not how great the teams are, but how bad they are. So one way or the other, either the NFC East is bad and it gets all the press, or the NFC East is great and it gets all the press. Either way, it seems like that's all that people want to talk about in certain media markets.
You talk about that Cowboys-Lions game, I'm sorry, being like the epitome of just fun, crazy, drama, tension, exciting finish. It had everything all in one game. It was like the perfect little football game. And then you have that Giants-Eagles game, which was one of the absolute worst things I've ever seen in my life. And the sad thing with this is I know someone who's a Giants fan, and all they could talk about was their excitement that the Cowboys lost, because now the Giants are only two games out of first. And when you really think about it, it's true. Seriously.
Oh, sure.
Any one of those four horrible teams, and yes, the Cowboys look to be the best of those four, but any one of those four teams can get slightly hot and sneak their way into the playoffs. And it's depressing that somebody has to win that division. It's depressing that one of those four teams, which is probably not going to even have a better record than any of the wild card contenders, because only one team from that division is going to make the playoffs. It is sad. I mean, this is, you know, they talk about every few years about reseeding the playoffs. Wow. Yes, somebody's going to win that division and host a playoff game. And it's just really, really ugly.
If the New York Giants come back from 0-6 and win that division and make the playoffs and win the Super Bowl, I suggest you retire from prognosticating, because you could not possibly do better than proclaiming that the Giants will start off slow to the season, get rumors about Tom Coughlin's job again, rebound, be gather themselves, come all the way back and win the title in New York in their home stadium. If you nail all of that, you need to just quit, because that's the end of it right there.
Are you trying to get me off my own show?
I'm just saying. I'm not trying to make you retire.
That would be
I'm
hard
to
duplicate.
I'm just saying, what else could you possibly nail? How much better could you possibly nail a pick than nailing it by doing that?
I've had a few good ones over the years, even just since we started the blog, because it's on the record. That year that the Seahawks went 7-9 and won the division, I believe I called that we would have a 7-win team win that division,
which was
surprising. I sure did. The Dream Team Eagles, I believe I had them out of the playoffs before the season even started. So I do have my moments. No, if I nailed this one with the Giants, though, that just drop the mic or drop the phone and just walk right off the stage.
Yeah, that would be an all-timer. Back to Dallas-Detroit, my opinions about the Dez Bryant explosion are up on my recap. Wonder if you had any strong opinions about it, or if I had to guess, more than likely you probably don't have very strong opinions about it at all.
Well, I mean, he's a troubled individual, and he always has been. They've always had to work on keeping him reined in. It was interesting watching his post-game comments, because he had no voice left. He was hoarse from all his yelling and ranting and raving. Yes, I kind of bought his explanation that he cares and he's a competitor and he wants to win, but I also think that he was getting so upstaged by Calvin Johnson, who was classy about the whole thing. He wasn't waving at guys for 30 yards before he scored a touchdown, like in St. Louis with the Seahawks with was that Golden Tate?
Hey, look at me! I'm on my way to the end zone. Look at me! I've never done this before. Hello.
Yeah, just styling his whole way to the end zone in a game his team had no business winning. but you know, back to Dez Bryant, I think he was upset the way the game was going. I don't know if he just wasn't getting the receptions, but clearly he wasn't getting 320 plus yards worth in that game. So I think some of it was he was being upstaged by a far better and far classier player. But sure, he's a competitor, and these guys are all jacked up and fired up, and there's players yelling on the sidelines all the time. But I think it was a little bit more publicized because of the storyline. They were sort of just feeding the monster at that point. So it did. Yeah, no, it didn't bother me. I didn't think he was shredding his team. He certainly didn't go out and pull a TO and throw his quarterback under the bus after the game. So as far as that's concerned, I'm done with that.
Yeah. He hasn't done that yet. Maybe that's coming someday.
one thing I wanted to ask you about was you seemed a little sore about it in the recap. Was your Dolphins letting you down a little bit there?
Because they come out, I don't want to say dominate the first half, but they played a very damn good game. They ran the ball. They had timely passing. They shut down Tom Brady. They disrupted his timing, which isn't all that hard this season because he's had trouble getting his timing together with his receivers all season. But if you watch the telecast of the game, the announcers talked about how Miami was out of the tunnel to start the second half early and were bouncing around and were so jacked up, and they were so ready to put the hammer down and bury the Patriots on their home field. They grasped the importance of the game and the passing of the torch that it would be if they could get this big win in Foxborough. They were so ready until the second half started, and then they weren't ready anymore. And I don't know what the fuck happened between the start of between the end of halftime and the start of the second half, when they were so ready and so jacked up. And, you know, That's what got me was, how can you be that ready? How can you project the image publicly of being that prepared and that ready to take the brass ring and take a hold of the mantle and do what you have to do to put this game away and then proceed to do absolutely everything you can to throw the game away? It was just so heartbreaking for somebody that predicted the Dolphins to have a lot more success than this year. It's so clear that the blocking, the pass blocking, and the protection of Ryan Tannehill is going to be the downfall of this team. The defense is between average and above average. The running game is below average, but that was sort of expected between Lamar Miller and Daniel Thomas. There wasn't much expected out of those two, but they've been okay. They're at 4.1 yards per pass per rush attempt on the year. That's not bad. It's the pass blocking. It's the 32 sacks that Ryan Tannehill has suffered this season. It's just so bad. It's going to be the downfall of this team. And there's some offensive line drama even going on as a result of this game and the aftermath of this game. Which I don't know if you had read about this, but on ProFootballTalk.com, they're saying that the Miami starting right tackle Jonathan Martin was being teased in the team cafeteria so bad, with guys acting like they don't want to even sit next to him. This is, I believe Monday. Monday or yesterday, that he was being so teased and so made fun of that he slammed his lunch tray down on the ground and walked out and has not been seen since. They got an offensive lineman that went AWOL because of the tease, because of how terrible that team's pass blocking has been all year. And the only reason this hasn't happened to Brian McKinney is because he probably spends all his time during the off week just sitting on a party bus and trying to find strippers named Sweet Pea. They brought McKinney in. They made the deal to get him in to shore up the offensive line. He has a very good first half. He actually does a good job on Chandler Jones. I don't know what the heck happened in the second half. He just started laying down, started getting run past. The New England defense and the Bill Belichick and the Blitz should get the credit for figuring out how to attack the offensive line and get to Ryan Tannehill, but they were relentless. And the Miami offensive line was just completely invisible. It was as if they weren't even out there on the field, and it really upset me. As somebody that went out on a limb to pick Miami to win the division, this being such a pivotal game towards that really showed me what Miami is made of, which is not a lot.
Well, you won't say it, but I will. Miami dominated that first half. That was truly the tale of two performances in two games. They go in 17-3 at halftime, and I don't know if maybe they started feeling like they were the better team and they took their foot off, but New England came back and Miami wasn't ready for the counterpunch at all. And New England just did their thing for the entire second half. They went to work on Miami. And Ryan Tannehill looked like a completely different quarterback. He completely wilted under all the pressure.
But they were out there to start the second half early. They were pumped up. They were ready. What do you mean they weren't ready? They were out there. They couldn't have been more ready. Come on.
That's great, but, you know, maybe it would have been better to be out there and instead of almost celebrating and being so excited to go back out there and we're just going to rip the Patriots a new one, a little more workmanlike. Go out there, because that's what New England did to them. New England came out and just did their job and just smoked them in that second half. I mean, we couldn't even get a cover out of that. You come back from 14 down at halftime and still not even, it was very similar to what Denver did to Washington. That was a game that was 21-7 4 minutes into the third quarter. I'm thinking, oh, my God, I'm giving another one away here on Denver because there's no way they're going to cover 13. 38 points later for Denver, it was easy. And very similar, you know, it's just, you know, Washington, after that pick six, is feeling themselves and, hey, look at this, we're going to come in here and we're gonna stick it to Peyton Manning in Denver. And all of a sudden it was just, oh, wait a minute. It's going to take a lot more than that for a mediocre team to you know, slay the dragon. And the Patriots and the Broncos are really class teams in the AFC, and clearly Miami is not ready to be in that tier of teams.
It was really, to me, the story of Week 8 was the terrible pass blocking around the league. I had last week's recap had, you know, who the shit, who was the shit, and who was the drizzling shit. And I had the shit as Jordan Reed and the drizzling shit as Josh Freeman, that performance that he had. So this week, the shit was obviously Megatron, just setting records and doing work and catching everything that was anywhere near him. And the drizzling shits was just all the pass blocking around the NFL. All of you stand up. Washington, stand up. Miami, stand up. Seattle on Monday night, stand up. The Pittsburgh Steelers couldn't protect Roethlisberger. Atlanta, all of you offensive lines that just refuse to protect your quarterback, stand up and take a bow because you are all collectively the drizzling shit.
Did you mention Buffalo?
I sure didn't, and I should have, because they were also getting their quarterback killed, Thad Lewis. Got him knocked out of the game for a second, I believe.
Yeah, there was a Jeff Toole sighting in that game, and for a moment there, I was just like, I could have just stopped paying attention to that game because I knew I had the cover. But then Thaddeus Lewis came back in and made it respectable. I just handed the reins of that bandwagon for Thaddeus Lewis right over to you and watched you sail into oblivion. That's my
took
move.
Took that some bitch right off the side of the mountain.
That's my move. Yep. And you had a big smile on your face all the way down, too. You just, yeehaw! You just loving it until you realize it was over.
When you're good at driving a truck wagon off the trail, you just enjoy it and go along with it because there's really nothing you can do.
Well, Miami's a good segue into our pick tonight.
We talked about how terrible Miami was. They had their big chance to step up on the big stage and choked it up. Cincinnati, on the other hand, did some proving of their own. They had a chance to show something against a decent Jets defense, and they showed 49 points to the New York Jets is what they did. So, predictably, the 6-2 Cincinnati Bengals now walk into South Beach as a 3-point road favorite at the 3-4 Miami Dolphins. Jason, who you got?
Yeah. This was a Sunday game. It's a slam dunk. I'm taking the Bengals, even though it goes against my short week theory that sometimes comes into play. At least when you have where it's not just a completely lopsided game. I mean, Miami's not a top-tier team, but they're not the Jaguars, you know. I mean, they're not that bad. They will put up a fight. They've got to be really stung by what happened to them against New England. But I think Cincinnati they're starting to ascend. They're really starting to – this is your Super Bowl pick here. So forget you having Miami to win the division. This is a great pick for you because this is really at odds with two teams that you saw as being clearly good teams going into the season. One is working out and the other one's not. I just think the Bengals have too much defense. Ryan Tannehill, I don't know what his problem is in big games or primetime games, even though it's only Thursday night. I like Cincinnati to get after him and win this one fairly easy.
Yeah, I think his problem on primetime games is the same problem that he has during daytime games. I'll say the number again, 32 times he's gone down to sack this year. They played seven games. He's been sacked 32 times. That's crazy. And Cincinnati, on the other hand, has played one more game. They haven't had their bye yet. And Andy Dalton has only gone down 16 times. You know, I love playing with my numbers. You know, I love playing with bets. Miami has double the sacks of Cincinnati. Miami has given up double the number of sacks to Cincinnati. So I'll take Cincinnati to score double the points. It just makes sense to me. I like 30 to 15, 30 to 17, something along those lines. Cincinnati should run. I'm telling you, this past week with all those teams giving up all those sacks really made an impression on me, and I'm going to have to look at those stats and see which teams are just giving up ridiculous amounts of sacks, which teams can actually protect their quarterbacks, because I think that might be something to really look at in the future. And one more thing, shout out to Marvin Jones putting up a big number, 4 touchdowns against the Jets last Sunday, and he only played 19 snaps. So that's a very interesting development, is that Cincinnati may have discovered a new guy to rely on next to A.J. Green, and they may not have even counted on him since he's not the full-time second receiver. That would be Mohamed Sanu. But how about that weapon to come off your bench as a slot receiver, Marvin Jones, with 4 touchdown receptions on only 19 snaps? That's called making an impact. I will see if he'll have an impact like that tomorrow night. But even if he doesn't, just paying more attention to him should open up a lot more stuff for A.J. Green, and Cincinnati should just roll over the hapless, hopeless Miami Dolphins. That'll do it for us on this Wednesday night, on this Halloween Eve. Get out and get your trick-or-treating on tomorrow night. Get all that good candy, hopefully not with nuts for those of you with nut allergies, which seems to be half the kids born nowadays, but I digress.
Or razor blades.
Definitely don't want the razor blades. That's, I think every human would be allergic to the razor blades. I think that's not a new thing. I think everyone's allergic to swallowing nuts. You can find our written recaps of Week 8, which Jason called my wall of text, because I went into a little more detail than usual on these games. But I was really, like I said, affected by what I saw on Sunday. But you can find both our recaps for Week 8, and our picks are always up at our blog, which is in much less detail, that's blogspot.com. You can email the show, in much less detail, at gmail.com. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Search for In Much Less Detail, the podcast. And our show page, where you can listen live, of course, is always right here at blogtalkradio.com/InMuchLessDetail. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at IMLBDre, and Jason's at IMLBJPG. This podcast is copyrighted. I had a horrible echo that I heard throughout the whole thing. I hope that's not part of the broadcast when we play it back later, but if it is, I sincerely apologize. I don't know what that was. I want to thank Grapes for the theme song called I Don't Know. It's been a while since I shouted out, gave some credit for the song, which I was on Michael's show, Football Fan Rush Radio. I called in last Sunday, and he responded by listening to our show and wanted to give you props, Jake, because you picked the song here, and he said this is a hot beat. That was his direct quote. So props from Michael from Football Fan Rush Radio for the wonderful theme song that we have. We will be back on Friday night to have our picks for the rest of NFL week number 9 as we move on through the halfway point of this season. It is going by, and news is happening, games are happening, results are piling up, and hopefully we learn a little bit more about each team as the weeks go on. I'm Dre, he's Jay. We will see you back here Friday night, 10 p.m. Central, for the rest of our picks for NFL week number 9. We will see you then. Enjoy your game tomorrow night.